Greetings to another episode of Real Science F. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, software engineer and creation speaker. So what's Real Science F? What does the F stand for?
Fred, I could tell you, but then we'd be killed probably by our attorney.
Okay.
We're Real Science. Well, we were Real Science Fred last week. Let's just say Real Science F and we'll see where.
Okay, see where we go from there.
See where it leads to.
Okay.
What do we do? Oh, this Creation magazine, the current one out January 2013. Fred, we've talked about it last week. It's got so many great articles. I'd like to continue with it, especially this article on this volcano in Mexico.
Yeah, Paracutin. Now, that's really interesting. This is like right out of a Hollywood movie. I mean, this farmer's out in his field with his wife, and the ground opens up in front of him. It's a brand new volcano.
Yeah.
I mean, so humans have witnessed the birth of a volcano. I mean, can you imagine coming across that?
Yeah, and his name is Dionisio and his wife Paula, and this was in 1943.
Oh, it wasn't back in 1 million BC?
No, right.
Because that volcano, we can
that
see
was,
it today.
That
I thought it
movie.
Took that long.
Right, exactly. Oh. And what happened was the ground opens up and the field around them is immediately filled with dark smoke and they got separated. And so the wife and the son thought the husband might have been killed, but they all survived. And within minutes, Fred, it was 6 feet tall. The ground rose up 6 feet.
6 feet. Amazing.
By the end of the week, it was 300 feet high. And within about a year, it was over 1,000 feet high. And after 9 years, it was all done. And it was 1,400 feet high.
1,400 feet. This now is, it's kind of like a tourist attraction now, right?
It is. And that is an abrupt rise out of, you know, a level plain. And here it is. So what's interesting about this is today the geologists say it's extinct.
Yeah,
that's the word they use, right? When they think a volcano will not erupt again, they say it's extinct. And normally, when you look at volcanoes or geologic features generally, what do the uniformitarian evolutionist geologists say? They typically say, well, that took hundreds of thousands or millions of years. And this one took nine.
9 years.
Nine. From birth to extinction, 9 years. I think that's really cool.
Oh, it is. It's remarkable. It kind of reminded me of Mount St. Helens creating those canyons in a matter of days with mud flows, not millions of years.
Yeah. And it also reminds me of at youngearth.com, the very first example of old Earth evidence that doesn't hold up is the island of Surtsey, because that island formed just like a half a century ago, and you have the chief geologist of Iceland, along with modern science writers, saying these features look like they're millions of years old, but they formed within days, weeks, and months.
So if this particular volcano in Mexico, if this farmer and his wife and people hadn't witnessed it and geologists stumbled across it, it sounds like we can almost guarantee that they would have thought it was millions of years old.
Millions of years ago.
You know, because wasn't it Charles Lyell that said something like, you can know the past by looking at present events?
That is exactly what they have said countless times, like the Hawaiian Islands, the Ring of Fire. This is typical. In fact, in Death Valley, now this is a severe example of this, but there was an eruption sometime in the past in Death Valley in California, and the geologists there used to say it happened 10,000 years ago, and Isaac Newton would have said, well, how could that be? It would have been before the Earth was formed. And so now they've redated it, and they said, you know what? It only occurred 800 years ago. And that's the trend. Things that we were told would take millions of years, we see that they can occur in only hundreds or thousands of years, or sometimes even within days or hours. And Fred, another favorite article in this issue is the box jellyfish. I just love this jellyfish. Although it's dangerous, it's the most toxic of all the different kinds of jellyfish, and you wouldn't want to get too close to it.
No, very dangerous. But man, it's got some interesting anatomy. How about the number of eyes that it has?
A jellyfish is considered to be primitive, simple life.
Yeah. basic life right. form.
And Fred, it has 24 eyes.
24 eyes. Do they all do the same thing?
Well, actually, it has four different kinds of eyes. 8 of its 24 eyes are the kind of eyes in vertebrates. They're very sophisticated.
Yeah, they've got a sophisticated lens, retina, iris, and cornea. And all of this is, what, a tenth of a millimeter across in width.
So they're tiny.
They're really tiny eyes, but they're very effective.
So a tenth of a millimeter would be a meter, a little more than a yard, broke up into 1,000 pieces. And so a tenth of one of those, these are tiny little eyes, and they're so sophisticated, but they have all different kinds of eyes. Now, a lot of people think that a jellyfish just sort of floats around and it eats whatever it happens to get caught in its tentacles. Mm-hmm. And some are more like that, but this is a very specific kind of predator. They hunt and they catch the kind of food that they want to eat, like crustaceans and all.
That's right. You know, evolutionists, they say it's a puzzle as to why they need such a complex set of eyes. And what I find really fascinating is they've got eyes that they always point upward. Mm. So no matter how they turn, the eyes are still pointing upward.
Yeah.
And so they're using terrestrial cues to locate where they are, which is amazing.
This really is startling. These box jellyfish, so they're different than the other kinds of jellyfish. They like to live and hunt in lagoons, and especially near the shoreline of the lagoon. But of course, the tides could be very strong. They could move a person, a boat, a jellyfish. But if this box jellyfish wants to stay in one general area, it uses its eyes that point upward, and this was startling to these evolutionary researchers. They figured out what the fish were looking at.
Yeah, they were looking at trees?
The tops of trees. It was a shock.
Well, I like what they wrote in the publication in Current Biology.
Yeah.
They said that they were surprised to find such a navigational system in an animal as basal as a jellyfish. What does basal mean?
Basal, primitive.
Basic. It's a simple organism.
Right, yeah.
It's just a box fish. It's a black box. It has little function. It's
me
simple.
Caveman, rocks, old, jellyfish, simple.
Me lose me iPad.
Primal. And so, Fred, it blows their mind because a jellyfish, how do you tell a story? Forget about it actually happening. How do you make up a story where these wildly sophisticated eyes are going to evolve, and they're going to evolve so that this creature can look at the tops of trees? This is a marine creature.
So wait a minute, which came first, the boxfish or the trees?
And they're going to look up out of the water, above the surface of the water, to the trees so that they could hover near their favorite kind of food. That is so awesome, and it's fun. It's rewarding. You and I point this out over and over again, that the evolutionists say, how do we explain that in an evolutionary scenario? How would that kind of sophistication evolve? Like what? Here's a jellyfish, and it's not going to survive unless it could look at the tops of trees.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's
the storytelling you have to come up with.
That
but
is
this
a fun,
is cool. This is a really neat design, and we're not surprised at all. But again, we've got another example of quotes from evolutionary peer-reviewed journals of where they use the word surprised and shocked.
Yes,
because they do not expect this. So, Bob, I like this next one because it's about Titan. What's Titan?
Titan is a moon of Saturn, and it's billions of years old.
They claim it's billions of years old. So here's another example of, you know, they make assumptions of an age of something, and they're confirmed by all the data, right?
No.
No, okay.
No. In fact, an article on The Universe Today, which is referenced in this fabulous creation magazine, says that Titan looks surprisingly youthful. And Fred, this is common so often. Things that are said to be billions and millions of years old, when they actually look at it, they say, you know, it sort of doesn't look all that old.
Yeah, and there you go using the word surprising again, and you're quoting directly. I mean, that is the word they use. They're surprised how little erosion has occurred in what should be a lot of erosion because they think it's billions of years old.
Billions of years old, and also very few craters. And what's interesting, Fred, if Titan was there orbiting Saturn for 4 billion years, then it should have a lot of craters, but it has very few. And what's great about that is you could then learn more about craters. Now, scientists have always assumed that when a big impactor hits, then it creates secondary craters, sort of like secondary smoke or secondary AIDS. secondary craters, right, where you have a crater hits and it throws up debris and the debris lands. And so then you have all these small craters. Mm-hmm. Well, what they found out was, whoa, the secondary craters, there's way more of them than we ever would have guessed. So that when you look at Mercury or the moon or Mars, there actually was not as many impacts as they thought, because the original impact creates a lot of secondary craters. Impacts.
Okay, interesting.
So if their crater dating mechanism actually had been valid, which it was not, they should now say, you know what? We no longer have the evidence for those great ages. We have to cut all those ages. But
their evidence is cratering.
Yes. They just wouldn't do that.
What about the ocean on this?
Oh, yeah. Moon? Yeah, they had predicted, because of the chemical processes going on this moon of Saturn, they predicted that the whole moon, this would be like a global thing, that it would be covered in an ocean of liquid ethane. Turns out that's not there. They have found a few large lakes of methane and ethane near the poles, but that's it, Fred. Not only that, the mid-latitudes are blanketed by sand dunes. Now, a sand dune is different from a liquid ocean.
Yeah. So their theory apparently is they know that solar winds are eroding the atmosphere. And so this methane, because of this erosion, is going to turn into liquid ethane. But it's just not happening at the rate that we would expect of the things billions of years old.
It's not happening. And it's an irreversible chemical process.
That's right.
So that once this process occurs, that's it. You can't go back. And so they're really stumped. And like we report constantly, this, again, is a major challenge to the view that Titan is billions of years old.
There's this prominent atmospheric scientist that had posted an article in Scientific American, and he put an upper limit of 10 million years on how long this atmosphere could last based on the known rates of the solar erosion of tearing it apart. Mm-hmm. It could only last 10 million years.
And these are maximum ages. So when you have these kinds of chronometers, whether it's a geochronometer or a solar chronometer, and you say, here's the maximum age this could be, then a lot of anti-creationists say, well, look, it's 10 million. No, they don't listen carefully. It's a maximum. At most, it could be based on a given process.
That's right.
We have a DVD that explains this, and this kind of evidence for so many of the moons and planets in our solar system, and it's produced by Spike Pisaris, formerly with the Military Space Program, and it's called Our Created Solar System.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Highly recommend
it. Isn't it good? What you aren't being told about astronomy. It's so good. So just go to our website, click on the store, and then go into the science department. You'll find fabulous resources, and that's one of our great DVDs.
Oh, yeah, highly recommend that.
Yeah.
So, Bob, the evolutionists, they have not given up on this ocean. So what did they do to the ocean? Do you remember?
They put it underground.
They put it underground.
That's
I mean, this comes from a paper out of the journal Science back in July, so this is recent, that they've come up with this idea that it's underground. It reminds me of some other hypotheses in evolution, like, you know, how do they come up with the comets? They create the Oort cloud.
Right.
We don't really know that it exists, so they just create it. Punctuated equilibrium, that's the thing where evolution occurred in small populations. That's why we don't see it in the fossil record.
Right, so the proofs that they evolve rapidly is that you don't see them.
You don't see the fossils.
Right. Like, how do you know that elephants are running through your office quickly? Well, we know that because we can't see them.
So this ocean,
these are
no
rescue
evidence
devices.
For this. They're rescue devices. There's no evidence that this underground ocean exists.
Mm-hmm. So that's a fun article on Titan. I so strongly recommend that people subscribe to Creation Magazine. Just go to creation.com. Fred, we don't get paid advertising to promote this. We just love it. And we recognize that the more people that are informed, the Bible says to remember your creator.
That's right.
Remember your creator.
And this is a great magazine. It's easy for everybody to read. It's very well laid out.
Yeah.
And I highly recommend subscription to people, because you can reach people by talking origins. There's so many people in this world that they don't believe in a creator at all. Mm-hmm. So if you preach Jesus to them right away, it's less likely to take hold.
Yeah. Then there's an article in here by Brian Thomas, and I believe Brian is the one who assembled the list of about 50 peer-reviewed papers published in science journals saying that they've discovered protein, original biological material, even DNA, even living bacteria in fossils that are supposed to be many millions of years old. So, Fred, this Brian Thomas, he's written another great article.
Featured in this article is a discussion on, we found collagen in, you know, these fossilized bones. How long could it really last? And he cites a UK expert that collagen could only really last on average about 450,000 years. And yet dinosaurs and these other animals that they're finding collagen in, they're supposed to be millions upon millions of years old. You know, dinosaurs 80 million years old.
Yeah.
They've got this fish at ICR that's on the wall that visitors can see that had collagen in it. And they say it looks like beef jerky.
Yeah, the Institute of Creation Research. It's a fossil.
It's a fossil.
Hanging there.
And evolutionists had believed it was millions of years old. They still do believe that.
Right. But they say there it is. You can see the collagen from the fish.
Yeah, and four independent studies have confirmed that this is original biological material. It is not this other stuff that they blamed it on, such as what, impressions, mineralized replacement, or carbon film. None of these things are true.
It turns out, and now they sequence these things. They find out this is original to the living creature. They call that endogenous, because when they say it came from within the organism, it's endogenous. So they say this is endogenous osteocytes, like bone cells, endogenous collagen, endogenous blood vessels, blood cells, hemoglobin. This is all so cool, Fred. And so not only would this collagen not last millions of years, but on our dinosaursofttissue.com website, we talk about amino acids. And amino acids are like hockey sticks. They're right or left-handed. And living creatures, they have only left-handed amino acids in their proteins. And once they die, they begin to turn back to 50-50, right and left-handed. Well, experts have studied this and have said, look, it'll only take 10,000 to 100,000 years or so, a million years in the best environment for these to turn back to 50-50. And so we said, but lo and behold, they're finding them not only in Pleistocene eggshells, which maybe is only a million years old or so, but now they have found left-handed amino acids in T-Rex eggshells, T-Rex, which is supposed to be like 65 million years or older. And they've even found it in South Africa in something called chert, C-H-E-R-T, which is supposedly 3 billion years old. And so there's all these overlapping areas of basically physics observations that these things could not last for millions or billions of years old. They've even found now, Mary Schweitzer has found dinosaur DNA, and it can't be contamination because it's inside an osteocyte cell. That cell is a dinosaur osteocyte.
Wow. So they've found DNA now. And how long can DNA last? I know scientists know
thousands of years.
Very fragile.
Now, Mary Schweitzer, her paper is to be published right now, this January 2013. It's to be published. But at the end of her paper, she does something I think that's a bit deceptive. She refers to another peer-reviewed paper that talks about how long DNA could last. And she says, well, you know, we know it could last 7 million years. We know it can. But she really misrepresented that paper and the chart in it, because it says based on the temperature, if it's below freezing, it might last up to 7 million years below freezing. But paleontologists do not believe that dinosaurs lived in below freezing temperatures and were buried in below freezing temperatures. When you look at the temperature of typical burial environments, then this DNA would be gone within thousands of years, not 7 million. And that's by the same paper and the same chart that Mary Schweitzer was referring to. I think by not telling her readers that she's referring to an estimate based on below freezing, she's really misrepresenting the science.
Oh, absolutely. And they, and these UK scientists, they even admit an average of maybe 1 million, 2 million years is as much as you can get if you put this collagen under freezing conditions. Yet nobody thinks the dinosaurs lived in freezing.
No,
they think it was a
And when they're buried in Montana in sandstone, it's not below zero.
That's right.
And not for 65 million years.
Yeah.
Fred, also this article talks about when they date rocks of known historical age. What they mean by that is, let's say a volcano erupts and the magma cools into rock. So when they date rocks, they're trying to date when did the rock solidify? When did it form as a solid rock. And this is known industry-wide. When they date rocks of known historical age, they always yield vastly inflated radioisotope ages. That's normal.
That's right. So if we can't trust dates of rocks where we know the age,
like from Mount St. Helens.
Yeah. Why are we expected to trust the dates of rocks where we don't know the age?
Exactly.
They never work for the rocks we know the age. Still ages millions of years old.
And wildly discordant ages, like from the exact same flow. And you'll date this part of the rock and that part of the rock, and you'll get ages that are tens of millions of years different.
That's right. Vastly different.
They also point out that when you use carbon-14 dating and you look at then the tissue decay rates, that the maximum age is thousands of years, not millions, for all these different proteins. Mm-hmm. So it's real
fun. The evidence is really overwhelming.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Oh, Buddha.
Buddha? What's up with Buddha?
Oh, Buddha, because that's what you say when you stub your toe. You say, Buddha. There's an article in here by a former Buddhist who's now a Christian, and he wrote a book called From Buddha to Jesus, and it's a major bestseller over in the South Pacific. It's just doing tremendously well.
So this guy converted from Buddhism to Christianity.
Yeah.
You know, he was taught that, you know, all religions are the same, and they supposedly really respect science. And so I think he recognizes that and uses that as a tool to reach Buddhists, right?
Yeah. It's the second best-selling Christian book ever in Thailand, for example, which is 95% a Buddhist. And his name is Dr. Steve Chokalanti, and he was born over there in Thailand. And Fred, he points out that when you have atheists or evolutionists in the West and they want to adopt some kind of a religion, they often adopt Buddhism because they could keep their atheistic evolution, Big Bang worldview. Mm-hmm. But then they feel satisfied at some level because God made us with a longing for spiritual health and completeness. And so they recognize that inner longing. So they try to find it in Buddhism.
That's right. God put eternity on our hearts.
Yes. But he points out that that's just simply false. Mm-hmm. Buddhism is, of course, not true. And he makes the most amazing observations about Buddhism. He says, for example, where the Bible exalts love, and love is the greatest commandment, he says that sometimes Buddhist writers will rip off the words of Jesus and the words of the Bible, and they won't credit them, and they'll pretend that they're their own words. He said, but in reality, the Buddha and millions of Buddhists since have believed that love was the enemy. And the closer you come to enlightenment, the more you renounce your family. You renounce intimacy with a spouse.
Yeah, Buddha abandoned his wife and young newborn.
That's exactly right. And so you have your wife, you have your child, and you leave them to search for enlightenment.
But he was a very good man, right? Just like Gandhi. Didn't Gandhi abandon his wife and family pretty much? Yeah, so, you know, Buddha, he left his wife and newborn child. He abandoned them.
Yeah, and that's not in any sense godly or spiritual or enlightened. That's pretty cruel.
Yeah, and I know that, you know, there's, you know, Gandhi wasn't the best family man either. You know, his wife felt abandoned from him, and his kids did. They wrote of that.
And so. Gandhi, that's Hinduism, right? But now Gandhi, remember, he would say his hunger strikes, either do what I say or I'll kill myself. That is not spiritually mature.
Not at all.
Eastern religions are perverse. Hindus will worship animals, and they let their children go into malnutrition while their cattle walks through their gardens and eats the food.
Yep.
Because the cattle is sacred, they think.
Yeah, worship the creation rather than the creator.
So whereas Christianity exalts love to its proper place, God is living, personal, relational, good, and loving. We're made in his image. We are to love. Whereas in Buddhism, love is part of the problem. When you can detach yourself from family affections, that's when you could begin to reach enlightenment. He also makes fun of reincarnation.
Oh, I thought that was pretty good. And amazingly, Gallup says 20% of the people believe in reincarnation. And I love what he says about reincarnation. A really good.
Yeah, he says, if you kill a goat, what will you be reincarnated into? And they say, a goat. What if you kill a pig? You'll come back as a pig.
And what if you kill, say, a rich man?
Oh, you come back as a rich man? Uh-oh. So well, they, well,
how do they deal with that dilemma?
That doesn't work. You go to some kind of occultist and you find out who you were in a past life. It's like everybody was a sultan or a princess. Like, yeah, everybody was. There are just too many of us for everybody to have been famous in a past life.
You know, I'm reading Killing Lincoln right now. So did John Wilkes Booth, is he going to become Lincoln?
I guess.
President of the United States?
I guess probably.
You know, if you follow this logic, it just shows how illogical it is.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
No.
Doesn't the Bible say that all men are appointed to die once, then the judgment?
That's exactly right.
Or does it say all men are appointed to die 50 times?
No.
20 times?
There is no reincarnation.
There's no reincarnation.
And for the Christian, to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. Jesus told the criminal on the cross who humbled himself, he said, "Today you will be with me in paradise."
That's
so
right.
We don't lose our identity when we die. So the last article we can cover is on the anteaters, and specifically the silky anteater.
Yeah, and actually there's four different kinds of anteaters. And they're all the same created kind, so there wasn't four different anteaters on the ark, just one created kind. But there's the silky anteater, the giant, the southern, and the northern anteater, which they call the Mexicana anteater. Now, it's not really that far north.
No, Mexico. So, Fred, when I read how evolutionists say that anteaters evolved, it reminds me of the last post from the Aaron-Rod debate, where I wrote that it's sad to assess the life's work of these evolutionists. They're like renowned Star Wars trivia buffs. They could distinguish between a juvenile Wookiee in a mature Ewok. You know, they could explain the geology of the frozen oceans on Hoth and how Tatooine was eventually covered by desert. But they're just making up stories. It's not real, but that's what they do with these anteaters and how they evolve.
Yeah. Evolutionists, they would say that these anteaters, because they're similar to aardvarks,
right,
that they're closely related to aardvarks.
Evolution-wise, and they call that homology.
Yeah, they
right?
call it homology. And, you know, aardvarks, they're not anteaters, but they are anteaters.
They eat ants, but they're not anteaters.
And so they lived in different parts of the globe, right?
The armadillos apparently were evolving in South America, and they find them in Europe. Gradually, they convince themselves, Fred, that it's all real.
Yeah, and evolutionists actually say that these anteaters, because they have similar features to aardvarks,
right,
that they were closely related by evolution.
Yeah.
Like everything else on the Tree of Life, it's been shattered to pieces.
Oh, yeah. I notice how in the proceedings of the Royal Society, they were looking at contradicting evidence from the fossils and from genetic evidence. And so here's what the evolutionists asked, Fred. They said, how could an anteater reach Europe 45 million years ago from South America when that continent, they believe, was isolated from the rest of the world? And they say it would have reached Europe maybe 7 million years before they think it might have evolved. So they suggest that these creatures may not be related after all. It's just all storytelling. It's not science. It's make-believe. It's storytelling.
That's
it's a
right.
fairy tale.
That's right. They have to use these illusionary devices to try to get
yes.
around the problem.
And so this is Bob Enyart, Fred Williams. You're listening to Real Science F. And check out Fred's website, evolutionfairytale.com. God bless you.